Welcome. Who's just joined?
Hey, Richard. It's Tom. Dave, it's Tom. How are you?
Good, Tom. How are you? How's everything going?
Things are going well, thank you.
Great. We're it right now. Richard and Tricia are involved still in some medical stuff. We'll be out this week, and I think back with us next week. I haven't heard yet from Kim. So what's going on for you, and is there anything that we could address that might be helpful to you before we move into the material today?
No, things are going well. Nothing new on my end. I've been looking at the Life Story download that was sent to me on Successful Life Stories Transformations. Looks good.
Okay. Are you getting further along in terms of refining what you're going to be doing in your coaching practice and your offerings?
So I made contact with a mentor coach recently to maybe start having that conversation, maybe sign on to do something like that for June or July. May 10th was the date, sometime after May 10th, I should hear about my class, being able to teach that class if my course is accepted.
Would that be more about jump-starting your practice to work with a mentor coach?
I think so, yeah. Working with a mentor coach, I think there's three things I want to focus on, and I think I might look to partner with a mentor coach to help me along in that process.
I see. Well, that's great. I think that can be very valuable.
I hope so. I think so as well.
Yeah, it'd be to hear how it goes. Anything at all that would be helpful for us to talk about?
No, I'm still moving along through the modules, enjoying it, and listening to the playbacks, which has been helpful too.
Yeah, and you should be able to download those and have them as reference whenever you.
Yes, fantastic.
Yeah, if there's nothing, I'll go ahead and move into the material, and then we'll have a little bit more time at the end in case Kim joins us or if there's anything.
I am here. Hi.
Oh, hey, welcome.
Hey, Kim. How are you?
Good, and you?
Good.
Bring us up to date. What's going on?
I started my radio program this week.
Oh, congratulations.
And we ended up calling it Courageous Currency.
And who's your audience, and what was the scope of what you covered?
Okay, so it's to do with the money story and your relationship with money. And my audience is probably, it's quite a big audience in South Africa. Classic radio is for the whole country. And it's on a business program. So it's in the evening when people are driving home from work. It's the business program.
Wow. That's great.
Wow.
Super audience.
So it's very exciting, and I'll be on every Monday night.
That's excellent. Congratulations on that.
So I was very excited, and I met with my new website people to start putting on some of this new kind of work that I'm, from what I'm learning from you, and then when I go and do some of the questions with clients and how they respond to it, because I'm getting the most incredible positive feedback from clients saying, sure, you're right, I've never thought of it like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's great. Is it a call-in? Is it live exchange?
No, so the radio is no call-in. I just had actually people email me afterwards. And that's why on the website now I want to start a blog around those phone calls.
I see.
Not phone calls, those radio programs.
Well, that's exciting that you're getting that kind of response. And I think it's really well planned.
In South Africa, there's nobody really doing this.
Hmm. Excellent.
So it is exciting. But what I'm doing now is I don't stay on. I'm finding I fall asleep, and it's not because you're boring, but because it's the middle of the night here,
I
can't take all the information in.
I'm not
so I actually go to bed now, and then I listen in the morning.
Yeah. Well, I understand totally, and I know that it's not a true seminar of exchange, but more a presentation, and that probably adds to it. So, yeah.
So that's why I go back and listen to. So for me, it's very useful having the recordings that you can listen to because of the time difference.
Great.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad you're able to join.
And I've been enjoying because I know next week I'm presenting. So I've been reading that workbook that you sent us on the different people's money stories, and so I can put mine together. Well, I present mine at the beginning at 11.
Okay, that's great. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Super.
Okay, excellent. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Dr. Dave, this is Richard.
Yeah, hey, welcome.
Hey, Richard.
How are you? I didn't know if you could make it or not.
No, I made it. Trish is traveling.
Okay.
And so I'm
well, bring us up
I'm here listening to these two wonderful fellow learners doing such a wonderful job.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I think that's great. I'm so glad that I decided to sign up with you in terms of doing some extra coaching for me and mentoring. And
great.
I have a lot to catch up on. I'm just about current in terms of the reading, and I'll be able to catch up with that because of my tax responsibilities we talked about. May the 15th is another deadline that we just are finishing up, and then I'm wide open for quite some time. So, and I'm enjoying it, learning, and there's so many things that are just so right on that it's like, wow. So I certainly appreciate your information, and I've listened to all the calls, so I'm current on the calls.
Okay, great. Super. And you'll have the permanent download of the presentation, the calls.
Yes.
At any point in the future. Good. Well, anything any of you would like to discuss before we move into the material?
Oh, also, I don't know if anyone else is going, but Trish and I are going to the event in Santa Cruz with you the beginning of next month.
Yeah. Kim, is that going to be a possibility?
Yeah, unfortunately, I won't be able to come. I'm really disappointed, but I can't seem to put it together at this stage.
Well, it's such a short trek from South Africa. I don't understand. Well, thank you for trying. We'll figure out something, you know.
Well, I'm planning to come in August, and I was hoping I can just pop in and visit.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that would be
hey, cool. You can come out to the wine country, too, and you can visit Trish and I.
That would be lovely. Thank you.
What a Texas farm and ranch looks like.
I've never been there, so it would be exciting for me.
20 minutes from Houston. Although August is like the month to not be anywhere in this part of the country. It's hot, unbearable, but still, that'll be great.
But South Africa is quite hot, generally.
Richard, are you and Trish for your roadmap case study? We have May 31st and June 7th open. Are those good dates for both of you to present?
May 31st and June 7th.
Uh-huh. Kim is next week, the 17th. Tom is the 24th. And those two dates are open?
May 31st and June the 7th. So we would take one on the 31st and one on June the 7th?
Yes, uh-huh.
Okay. When's the seminar?
I'm sorry, what?
When is the seminar that you're doing in Santa Cruz? Those dates are pretty close.
June 9th through 11th.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so the 31st and the 7th is fine.
Okay. All right, great. I'll have you down, and I'll let you and her work it out about who does which, okay?
Yeah, it's always ladies first, right?
Oh, okay.
No.
Well, she's not here to defend herself.
No. I'll take the 31st. She can take the 7th. That's
okay.
Fine.
Okay. All right, great. Well, thank you. That's great. Anything else before we move into the material? Anything
else? Looking forward to it.
Okay. Anyone?
Which book are we on now for tonight?
Wait, say it again, please.
Which module are we on, the book?
We are on module 5, seminar 7, Mind Matters.
Okay, thank you.
Okay? Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, well,
I'll catch you next week.
Say it again?
I'm going to bed. I'm going to chat to you next week.
Okay.
Good night, Kim.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, we're going to talk about mind matters and brain business. I want to review some things. Behavioral economics studies how people really think and behave as opposed to how they think they behave about financial matters, which is traditional economics. Neuroeconomics studies how the brain interacts with the external environment to produce economic behavior, the neurobiological foundations of economic decision-making. It's now possible to study this because we can directly observe brain functions during activities of decision-making. And emotional economics, the trademark term of mind, studies the interactions of mind and brain impacting money behavior and financial decisions. So each of these have really their own dimension. They're overlapping, but they're specific. So I want to talk a little bit about the some money mistakes and financial fallacies, just to have you have this in a catalog of information so that it will inform your listening for when you hear it from clients, to be able to engage with them in understanding. Compromised money behaviors and financial decisions, in one way of thinking about it, can fall into one of four categories, the ABCs, the affect biases, feelings, behavioral biases, cognitive biases, and social biases. We've already discussed some in the vignettes and examples I've given. In addition to abandoning logic and reason, most of these fallacies transcend age, gender, education, and nationality. And I want to highlight and illustrate just a couple of the most common in each of these categories. And these are ones that you haven't seen yet in writing on neuroeconomics or behavioral economics. Let's look first at affective or emotional biases, biases that are based on primarily emotion and how emotion distort decision-making. An example here is nostalgia bias. We feel more nostalgic at difficult times. Nostalgia remembers things not as they were, but as we wish them to be. Airbrushed memories backlit by idealization. Nostalgia recalls the ideal rather than the real. Has anyone gotten worse in high school and college sports as years go on, or become less popular in memory replays? I'm really close to being All-State in basketball twice in one year, probably by next year. And that was the season we were undefeated. Now, marketing taps into nostalgic experiences. It's easier and faster to associate a product with an ideal memory rather than to create a whole new product identity. A nostalgic trigger is coupled with new information. Arnold Palmer and that old tractor. Two classics, both preserved by one particular motor oil. Another, invincibility bias. The seemingly inextinguishable sense of immortality that we all have when we were young, but in adulthood there are still whispers. For example, 19% of the population believe they're in the upper 1% of income. 90% of all drivers believe they're above average. I know that's not true here in Texas. 75% of people believe they're healthier than average. And another simple example, the tech rally investors in the late 1990s. Expertise in one area does not equate with expertise in another. From successful physician to famous artist, people may not translate their accomplishments in one area to money or investment savvy. Different parts of the brain are involved, different talents and mindsets. Even Warren Buffett recognized this about himself. I don't think being able to allocate capital means you're good at anything else. Another example, optimism bias. The search for a good story can lead to miscalculating and underestimating risks. Optimism bias, a positivity illusion, can also benefit by allowing you to engage in tasks you wouldn't ordinarily take on. Then the sunk cost fallacy of money over time can sustain you to complete it. Here's an example of a healthy optimism bias. When I started the company, I was 52 years old. I had diabetes, lost my gallbladder, most of my thyroid gland, but I was convinced the best was still ahead of me. That was Ray Kroc, founder of McDonald's. Here are some illustrations of behavior biases. Now, all of these 27 behavioral biases and financial fallacies are listed in your curriculum and explanations and examples. I just want to highlight a couple here for discussion to just give you an illustration for us to use and refer to. One is transference fallacy. In psychoanalysis, the tendency to redirect feelings from a past context to a current one is considered a type of transference. It's simply to use old software to process a new experience. Here's an example of how that software can become outdated or not be useful as a transition. Digital Equipment Corporation posted a 13% decline. Hewlett-Packard collapsed almost half its value in the same trading day following that digital equipment announcement. Digital Equipment's difficulty was completely unrelated to HP's operation and profitability. The carryover, both were computer companies. Now, consider how often you update the software on your computer. Probably so often you use the automatic mode to do it. Our own software needs updating just as frequently and systematically. Now, a caveat here is don't consider adding new information to be the same as updating the operating system. Your beliefs are the software that drives behavior. A subtle transference fallacy is to repeat past behaviors that actually work, but continuing to do that can make a mediocre decision into a habit, and always conditions can change. Another example, spending justification. Just this once, it's on sale, I deserve it, it'll cheer me up, life is short. Now, those are mine, you'll have to think of your own. But it's creating a just cause to spend. Someone takes money from retirement savings to spend. The justification, an immediate need is greater than an abstract future need of retirement. So the coaching challenge, how would you repay it? A spending justification travesty. Someone adds up all the money they've saved by buying things on sale, some of which they may have no use for. From that total of savings, the figure is presented as the money that they can now spend, as if it had been generated. Spending twice does not equate with savings once. To say that very simply, someone walks out of the store and says, I just saved $200. Well, that's a self-deception because they didn't really save it. They didn't put $200 into a savings pile. They didn't spend $200 that they were conned into believing that the product was worth and marked down from, so they focused on what they didn't spend as if it were savings and framed it in that way, which made it feel good. A status quo bias. The tendency to opt for what we're used to, the status quo, the resistance to leaving a comfort zone. The status quo bias is another name for inertia. Now, think about how marketers do this when they set up a continuity program. For example, a free 3-month trial subscription, also called a forced free trial. You give your credit card, and then you get 3 free months free. But beginning the 4th month, they begin charging your credit card unless you unsubscribe. 82% of people don't unsubscribe. Only 64% of people who continue the subscription actually read it. That's the status quo bias. People stick with default choices even when the choices are costly or compromised. Here are a couple of examples. One is economist William Samuelson and Richard Zuckhauser found that when people are told that an investment tool has been selected for them and they would have to switch to another one of four investments, an overwhelming 47% stayed with what somebody else selected, significantly greater than those who have chosen that same investment when four equal possibilities were presented from scratch. Another example, Christopher C., a University of Chicago Business School scientist, did this study with students. Asked if they would hold on to a stock that lost 50% of its value in the last 3 months, the majority were reluctant to sell and decided to keep the stock. He then had to ask his students to imagine that a cat jumps on their computer keyboard and inadvertently sells some of the shares. Will they buy the shares back that they were reluctant to sell? Almost nobody would buy them back because they had already lost 50%. The inertia effect in both instances was powerful, even though in one instance a cat made the investment decision. Now, the power of inertia can be strategically fashioned to produce better outcomes. We can set the program, the status quo, to make a good choice the default pattern. An example is automatic enrollment savings program for retirement. If you do it yourself, if you're not in a company that does this, and remember this is always your option, it's one single good decision that becomes automatic to set up an automatic withdrawal from your checking account the first day of each month to automatically go into your retirement account. You only have to make a good decision once. Now, cognitive biases. Here's an example of a cognitive bias that's a diagnosis bias. This one is particularly important to think about because I think it affects us in subtle ways. Once we label a person or a situation, we're prone then to not only stick with that, but further to seek data to confirm that notion more vigorously, coupled with blindness to evidence that contradicts it. Here's an example. Two economists, Barry Staw and Ha Huang, studied skill categories and statistics of new NBA players. They distilled these statistics into distinct skill measuring categories, scoring, quickness, toughness, and they looked at all the variables that determined playing time in games, skill categories, performance, injury or trade status. There was one variable that had greater impact than any of these actual performance data. It was the player's draft selection order. In fact, draft order was the variable that was more highly correlated with playing time during the first 5 years in the NBA for all the players studied, which was as long as they did this study. Even though skill and performance determines a draft order, once picked, coaches and managers should only be interested in the player's performance. In other words, once the draft is over, the draft number's history, and performance is everything. But then for the next 5 years, how the manager coaches expected them to perform was more significant than how they actually did perform. Another example, extrapolation errors, predicting the future based on the past. Peter Bernstein, who money manager called the smartest investor living at the time, said, extrapolation errors are the most common mistake made in investing. We predict the future based on the past. Nassim Nicholas Taleb described the black swan effect as a highly improbable event characterized by unpredictability, a huge impact, and a retrospective explanation that makes it make sense and even seem more predictable than it was. Examples include the success of Google, the internet, the occurrence of 9/11. Before we knew about any of these things, we could never have predicted that they would exist or how huge the impact would be. And the same with black swans, which how he named the metaphor in the book and study. Before Australia was discovered, people thought all swans were white. And our brains are hardwired to focus on specifics rather than principles. Additionally, we concentrate on what we already know and then give little consideration to what we don't know. We don't know what we don't know. So once Australia was discovered, the existence of black swans came into being. Well, of course, black swans have always been there. But yet nobody knew it. Nobody even thought about it until they actually saw it. Same with the Internet. Same with Google. A coin is flipped and lands on tails 6 times in a row. What's your bet about what the next flip will be? Well, the gambler's fallacy here, no matter how many times in a row a tails comes up, it's no more likely to come up tails than heads the next flip. It's still 50-50. This fallacy exists because we remember and we attribute meaning. We see patterns and infer narratives where none exist. We make stories. The brain is a pattern-seeking organ. Our mind needs a story and our brain needs closure. Never mind that the closure may not be accurate, may not be a cause and effect, but nonetheless is a closure. Our minds and psyches abhor ineffectiveness. Doing nothing is often the hardest. So this is a challenge in a really rapidly proceeding market, whether it's declining or advancing. The instinct is to do something. If it's declining quickly, to do something to avert or reverse the loss. We have a bias, including cultural, against inactivity because we feel helpless and want to convert it into being effective in some way. And combine this bias against inactivity with wanting to predict the future on the basis of the past, because the brain sees patterns and therefore predicts patterns. Now, a final category, the ABCs, affect, behavior, cognition, and S is social bias. An example here is an affinity bias. We underestimate the risk of the things we like. We overestimate the risk of the things we don't like foreign enemies or an out-of-favor investment. A simple example. You bet $20 on the Super Bowl on a favorite, and you lose. Well, that's unlucky. You lose $200 betting that your alma mater will win their college game even though they have the worst record in the conference. That's affinity bias. Most of these mistakes now that we've talked about, and I've just illustrated a few in each of the categories, most of the mistakes are based on the past or on the future. Mistakes based on past data, a past label to identify, old software to process. Both are transference bias. An example of a mistake looking to the future, optimism bias, extrapolation error. An example of an extrapolation error that resulted in a slight underestimate of prediction going forward was this one made in 1943. I think there's a world market for maybe 5 computers. That was a prediction by Thomas Watson, then the chairman of IBM. So let's look at money and value and some assorted things to think about. We grew up with the idea that you have to work to earn money. If you view your work as where you get your satisfaction rather than your money, you can reframe the experience and set up perhaps different ways of serving people. Figure out how to bring value to others, how to provide them your service or product, and you'll be rewarded. But you have to create a strategic path to be rewarded. If you don't have a purpose for each dollar that you have or will have, you may not have it. Remember how having a goal enhances motivation and how having a deadline can crystallize a focus to complete the requirements for the deadline? Maybe if you didn't have the deadline, the work would have dragged out. Economics and wealth can work in the same way. If you don't have a clear, crystallized vision of how you'll earn, manage, and ultimately use each dollar, the dollar may not manifest. if you place wealth as a goal, yet have a contradictory belief that the pursuit of wealth is materialistic, you have a conflict. You have a surface story of wealth as a goal, a shadow story that says this is not a good thing, it's materialistic. A conflict simply means that you're writing two stories simultaneously that may contradict one another. If they go in exactly opposite directions, then you're stuck. But from the approach that we're talking about, the idea is to look at creating both stories. Neither are there until you create them. When you get needs and ideals aligned with strategies and goals, you can realign into the singular story that you want to get all of you going the same direction, the same flow. Wealth can't accrue contrary to a value that opposes it or to ambivalence about it. Shadow stories are very powerful. If saving is not your goal, you won't accidentally save money. Review your list of ideals. If your goals and ideals don't match, then that can create a compromise. Or if the ones that do are not high on your list, you may procrastinate and other things may subjugate what you really want. Each person decides how to define money. Each person can make her own decisions and definitions, or let others hijack the agenda and determine the meaning. The key to making money is creating value and doing it consistently. People pay when you add value to their lives. They reward you with what they feel the value is when you ask. I want to talk about spirituality and money for just a moment. One of my favorite descriptions of spirituality is from John Updike. Pressed, I would define spirituality as the shadow of light humanity casts as it moves through the darkness of everything that can be explained. Now, there does not have to be a split between spirituality and money. Spirituality and profitability can be very compatible. There's nothing intrinsically unspiritual about money. It's one of those assumptions like starving artists. Why should someone of exceptional talent have difficulty converting that ability into significant income? They need a mentor coach. Abundance, wealth, spirituality are synonyms. The antonyms, suffering, scarcity, non-spiritual. You may not really know what it's like to be truly spiritual unless you're wealthy. How free to be spiritually resonant can you be if you're worried about making the rent payment by the first of the month? Now, remember, wealthy does not automatically equate with worldly riches. It doesn't rule it out, but it's not an equation either. But it must incorporate aspects of freedom and choice in the context of the experience of abundance. If you spend some of your energy preoccupied with scarcity, with barely making it on your income each month, you may not have carved out the space to experience true spirituality. If you're running and a bear is chasing you, you don't have the freedom of a contemplative moment to think great thoughts or create new ideas. When someone says, "I'm not in it for the money," I believe that person because I know the experience, unless it's a rationalization for not making much money. When you're truly immersed, passionate, and delivering immense value, this is synonymous with abundant income. It's the result when there's alignment. Having a fantastic experience of bringing value to people and making fantastic money are seamlessly interwoven in a spiritual path. If you're not making enough money, the question is, why are you not showing up? Where are you hiding out? Rich and spiritual are synonyms. And remember, rich does not equal wealth only. You will improve your health by creating less stress, as stress causes the body to be less healthy. You'll create an attitude and an experience of abundance, which will also enhance wellness. We're going to devote an entire seminar to wellness, our final one. So let's look at value and beliefs. Money is a token of value, but it can't replace value. The value we attribute, the belief, can fundamentally change how we perceive something. You already know how beliefs can determine how much you really enjoy your Cabernet Sauvignon. Now, let's look briefly at the background music for this wine tasting. Remember the wine tasting study, the five Cabernet Sauvignon. On a cold January morning during rush hour, an ordinary-looking guy dressed in jeans and a baseball cap took out his violin in a subway station in Washington, D.C. For the next 43 minutes, he performed one of the most challenging pieces composed for the violin, Bach's Sonatas and Partitas for Unaccompanied Violin. 1,097 people walked by. I've seen this video more than once. He was barely noticed, just playing on a passenger platform like an average street musician. Actually, one person recognized him and stayed for the remainder of the time. His name? Joshua Bell, one of the greatest violinists alive, who regularly performs to sold-out crowds at concert halls throughout the world. His violin? A $3.5 million Stradivarius. In this study by the Washington Post, the D.C. commuters heard a world-class concert, but the value they attributed to Bell's performance was based on their perception. He wasn't even mugged for his violin. Value attribution, one of the social biases in the ABC's list that you have, is our own shortcut to determine how we judge what we see, even what's worthy of our attention. Then the value we assign shapes our perception. So, look carefully at your beliefs, the assumptions of your money story. They're ghostwriting your vision. The most common reason people don't accumulate wealth is they don't believe they really can. Or if they do, they don't devise a specific plan and stick to it. Tell me your assumptions, and I'll tell you how much money you'll make. Beliefs are the software that drives behavior. We now know that beliefs can actually turn genes on or turn them off. In changing your belief and the result of the change in your action, also changing your mind as well as your brain. So let's look for just a bit at mental models and context termination. A mental model is a representation of external reality inside your head. A mental model incorporates knowledge and principles about the world. We each have several mental models in our head. And mental models are simply stories. The stories are composed of metaphors and reason and the whole accumulation of information within that mindset. If we don't have enough mental models, we tend to overuse the ones we have. To a man with a hammer, every problem looks like a nail. We overreach and apply the same mental model to solve more problems than it actually can. The models that we choose, then, need to come from different disciplines. One discipline can't possibly encompass all the wisdom of the world. An example of a mindset in action is how we make decisions to purchase products. Neuroscience labs have shown that if we're attracted by a product, it's because we identify with it. It's because the product fits into the picture we have of ourselves or who we want to become, as shown by increased brain activity and scanning experience. Mental models are stored in the hippocampus, the brain's memory focal point. A recent discovery reported in Science magazine was the finding of a new type of cell, Barter cells. Barter cells are active to discern the limits of ending and another beginning. This means that the brain functions like a Google map. It creates multiple independent images while finding our way in the world. When a new situation arises, the map changes. When one context or environment ends and another begins, another map is booted up. This explains how we have different contexts or frames for different situations. This is the essence of having different states of mind or mindsets. These maps are stored in our unconscious. These are our mental models. These mental models, including beliefs and behaviors, began to be downloaded in the first years of life. And this is, for example, how money scripts can begin to be written by caregivers early in life. The scripts are often so deeply ingrained that they're not even conscious. They're just part of the operating system. Yet you can rewrite these programs in your mind. First, by recognizing exactly what you're doing and that you are writing your own story. In other words, to think about it as every day is a blank page. Yeah, there are preset patterns that are there in your brain that become the default mode when they're activated, but whatever you choose, even if it's automatic, and even if you don't think about it, it's still a choice. So this is what creates the potential power of the mentor-coaching relationship, to look at everything we do, whatever we think and feel and experience, is what we create each moment. It's not there until created. So this is one of the things that we think about consistently in helping someone understand and maybe then revise their stories, to look at how to deconstruct the story and understand it as an active component, an active creation. Every instant is an active creation. Now, let me give you some examples about how a mindset can determine money behavior. Particular associations can be connected with certain economic decisions. Dr. Jennifer Lerner's lab at Harvard studies emotion and decision-making. Specifically, she investigates how social and emotional factors influence judgment and decision-making. Some examples. People feeling depressed are willing to spend more money than when they're in a better mood. One example of how social events affect money behaviors is the day Lehman Brothers failed. The expensive shops along New York's Madison Avenue had one of their best days in history. And the reason here, when the going gets tough, the tough go shopping, when someone is down, the possibility of spending boots up dopamine, the pleasure chemical, so someone is self-medicated by spending and by continuing to find ways to spend. People who are angry will take on more financial risk. People who are sad will take on less financial risk. And at times, your pain may seek out money, thinking money and spending will make it go away or at least counter it. Maybe this is not always conscious. Your pleasure seeks out money too, thinking money will enhance and extend the pleasure. Money issues can work as a navigation system to find old beliefs and behaviors that currently don't work. Uncertainty or anxiety will rigidify principles into rules. Neuroeconomists have demonstrated that people who are fearful cling more to what they have. They don't want to take a chance. They hunker down. Our nervous system shuts down in an adaptive effort at survival. The result is a restriction in the ability of our minds and bodies to function. At a time of crisis, fear, or uncertainty, people reduce spending. When fear is dominant, money is not only constricted, but hoarded. Consumers who are risk-averse hunker down. This has been called the negative wealth effect. Some additional considerations of mood and money relationship. When you feel bad or down, your attention scatters because of low dopamine. Dopamine is the brain chemical of stimulation and excitement, serving as a gateway to the regulation of working memory. To remedy, then you may find things to spike your mood. Food, stimulation, risk, alcohol, a new relationship. When you feel excited, which is a spike in dopamine, your attention is alert to new opportunity. When a task becomes too easy or too routine, dopamine fades, it wanes, and the low stimulation means you'll soon be distracted and want to self-stimulate to do something else to boot up dopamine. So it can be a real repetitive kind of cycle. With a hard task, when a task is hard, you may give up. If it's just hard enough, though, and you have a belief that you can be effective, you may sustain attention to create a steady flow of dopamine. This sustained state of flow is an important component to long-term effort, even long-term happiness. Another way of thinking about this relationship of mood and money is that with sadness, spending attempts mood repair and buying boosts a sense of self-worth temporarily. Researchers led by Cynthia Kreider found that sad people become self-focused and spend as much as 300% more with the same type of commodity, the same item as when they were not sad. The new purchases distract from what's bothering them. A new possession reduces anxiety and a sad mood because the act of spending stimulates the pleasure center in the brain, same way that cocaine does. Since spending is an attempted self-regulation of a mood, some of these principles may apply to make no purchase when you're really sad or upset. Spend only cash when sad or upset, especially, and have a limited amount. Use other means of self-regulation, such as connection with friends, listening to music, other distractions, such as reading or exercise. Neuroscience has demonstrated that humans have two decision systems, an analytic and an intuitive one. Different situations and patterns activate different parts of the brain. Financial success triggers the same neurocircuits that cocaine does, the dopamine system. With increasing financial success, investors become increasingly immune to risk, taking greater chances for greater success, hopefully. So risk is both stimulating and addictive. It creates a dopamine and an adrenaline rush of excitement. A strategy planned while you're calm in your office or home may miss the mark about how you'll respond in a different state of mind, such as under stress. So one of the last couple of things I want to consider here is about priming. Our decisions are very reliant on the context of our experiences. Priming is what psychologists define as the incidental activation of knowledge structures by the current situational context. In other words, the context boots up a particular mindset. Now, this is helpful to know, but it's something that we're not even aware of often. An example, a test was done in which French and German wines were offered in a supermarket. The wines were matched for price and quality. After the choice was made, a researcher approached the customer and asked why he picked a particular wine that he did. The customer typically mentioned things like price or quality, or the anticipation of the match with a meal. The researcher then asked whether the customer notices what kind of music was being played and if that had any bearing on his decision. Most customers acknowledged hearing the music, but almost every one of them felt it had nothing to do with their selection. Actually, when French music was played, French wines were selected 77% of the time. When German music was played, German wines were selected 73% of the time. But yet, almost 90% of people, even when told that, said, well, it didn't really have any influence on their choice. So this can affect also market bubbles, because market bubbles are a collective experience of a state of mind. The herd mentality can create an altered state of a group of people as well. Poker players call it tilt, and tilt makes reactivity irresistible at times. A bubble in which we subscribe to a popular story or a stock investment until it bursts. A story can take on a life of its own. The tulip mania of the early 1600s occurred at a time that newspapers and pamphlets were just beginning circulation. The crash of 1929 coincided with the initial mass radio broadcast. The tech bubble of the late 1990s corresponded with the proliferation of the internet. Now, here's one thing about irrelevant information. We assume that people become well informed about the options they're considering to make decisions on close scrutiny. This notion is contrary to how our minds work. People do not even respond in reasonably rational ways to the information available to them. Consider the proposition offered by Robert H. Frank, economics professor at Cornell University. People who set their watches a few minutes ahead to ensure punctuality, when asked for the time, would stop and perform the necessary subtraction before answering. They didn't fool themselves one bit. They weren't fooled by the incorrect information of their watch. They just had to work harder. They had to perceive the image at face value, do the subtraction, and then reframe the actual time for their schedule. So here are some final considerations to factor mind and brain influence. To counter mind and brain influence, or biases, or fallacy, consider these following. Know exactly what you need and want. Focus your decisions on your end point and know what good enough is. If you're not clear and precise, you may become susceptible to charm, persuasion, brand, advertising, social pressure. Make certain what is offered, a product or a process, makes sense and feels right. Look at the benefits directly to you. Look at the benefits to the seller. Recognize the mind's inclination to justify and rationalize a decision and to deny worst-case scenarios. In other words, to remain inhabiting the story that you want to believe. Remember, the brain is hardwired for optimism. A common optimism, meaning present denial, is to believe that your income will rise to pay off debt or keep up with an oversized mortgage. We judge our decisions by what we see others doing. If a neighbor buys a new car, we really want to rationalize a purchase. Mirror neurons are at play here in the brain. Oxytocin release occurs with the experience of connection with others. Another example, bids at an auction start low so that people get more involved and bidders get emotionally attached to an item. Set an endpoint for any item that you consider purchasing to minimize emotional shaping of economic decisions. And finally, recent research has shown that we are more likely to trust people who look like us. Researchers even demonstrated that we're likely to entrust money to strangers whose faces on a computer screen were digitally manipulated to resemble the volunteers. A study at University of Aberdeen found that trust increased almost 50% when faces were altered by the computer to look more like the participant. Okay, we're in discussion mode now. I'm interested if there are any questions or clarifications or aspects of what would be helpful for us to talk about. Is what we've just
Well, the only problem for me, this is Richard, Dr. David, is that most of these biases I checked off as my own. Wow.
Which bias, Richard?
Because that's the way our minds and brains work. It's just helpful to know what they are, to identify them, and to help our clients identify them so that they're not acted on.
Yeah, it is amazing.
Inherent, yeah. And they become invisible, and because they've been so much a part of our unconscious operating system for so long, they've become wired and refined, and we just automatically do it. So it's helpful to highlight it, to code our radar to listen to it for ourselves and for others, and to see which ones work and which ones some work really, really well. You know, an optimism bias is great when you start a project, because if you really knew from the beginning how long it was going to take, you probably would be daunted and not start. And then once your project starts and it's taking a lot longer than you thought it would and you feel like quitting, well, there's the sunk cost fallacy. I can't stop now. You know, I've certainly done that and continue to. So, yeah, that's a great point, and that's why I wanted to specifically list and spell out these ABCs of money mistakes and natural fallacy.
Well, the other thing, too, is just the overwhelming evidence that we have the responsibility to make decisions specifically based upon a story and clear strategic path that we have designed ourselves, and to be flexible with that. I mean, it's amazing.
Yeah, and that's why recognizing authorship and owning your story, the first two steps, seems so obvious, but yet it's really not, because there's such richness, subtlety, and complexity of all that story involves and all of the formative aspects of it and the kinds of implicit biases that we have in various ways, and money is just one of them.
Yeah, well, the thing in the money and mood section, when you talked about how important it is to create a steady stream of dopamine so that you're steady in terms of your decision-making and you have that sufficient amount of dopamine flowing through you so that you're making decisions from the right perspective.
Exactly, yes.
Right.
That self-regulation is so crucial to balanced decision and examining ourselves and our decision-making process in an ongoing way.
Now, see, I always thought that I was supposed to just wake up to that and I was supposed to be that way, and if I wasn't, there was something wrong with me.
That's understandable. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And I love the story about the violin player.
Yeah.
I mean, that is so true in terms of people just not noticing because of the circumstances. Not only that, he was just dressed in ordinary clothes, so he could only be an ordinary person.
I mean, he looked so ordinary. He was just in a, you know, in a corner in a baseball cap and kind of, you know, floppy jeans, and he didn't look like anybody. He certainly didn't look like Joshua Bell. I mean, yeah, it was just amazing. He played it very well both ways. Anything else that would be helpful to talk about? See, this is where I think, especially as you do some of the exercises yourself, as we go through these modules, you'll be able to see which ones you might find useful with which clients, if you do want to use any of the exercises or the work tools with clients. You'll be able to have a working knowledge of them, see if any one of them might illuminate something that might be. Anything else from anyone? Well, thank you all very much. I appreciate all of your energy and input, interaction. It brings us in some very specific ways, and I appreciate that. We'll pick up right here next time.
You
guys have
okay.
a great rest,
you.
Rest of the week.
All right.
Thank you, Jason. Thank you. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Take care, Richard. Bye-bye.